Alan Kring Productions, in association with the Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, for spring semester 2022. Today, capital budgeting for mutually exclusive projects. It's the end of the capital budgeting, and it's actually a very straightforward, well, it's straightforward how the decision-making comes about for that kind of a problem where you have two projects and you can't take them both on. Before we do that, of course, we need to look at the numbers for the day and see how sad and grim the situation is, or if it's a good day on the street. So if we look at that right now, the Dow actually was up a half a percent, more than half a percent. The S&P 500 barely broke even for the day, and the NASDAQ just took a whack. By the end of the day, both the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ had lost their mojo. Now, okay. Thank you. See, I wanted you to psychically see it, if you could. Whatever, now I have to wait for the stupid thing. Let me explain. I was actually trying to create, you have a number of resources in your, that I've put into your resources tab. And among those, some problems with stock valuation, problems with of that kind. So look through your resource and you'll find a few new tabs there. I was going to do that stock valuation, if you saw it and looked at it before, there were some jumbled words in it. So I didn't realize it until last night, and I took it down and fixed it. So if you've already downloaded it, download it again. But like I said, there are a couple of other things, and there's going to be an Excel sheet for what I've been doing the last few days as well. I'll upload it. Okay. Yeah, it's not a horrible day, but the NASDAQ was not in good shape at all, down a full percent by the end. Crude has been finding its way back. It wants to come back up, but there is quite a bit of oil right now showing up on the at the refineries because of the release from these of million barrels from the Strategic Reserve of the United States, and also similar release of reserves from other resources. Interestingly enough, I am thinking, and I'm seeing it here, but I'm not sure if that's why it's happening. There's a pop here. Apparently, the oil that is moving through the Black Sea is now being blocked, the Black Sea being right there in the area of the conflict in Eastern Europe. And so if that happens, you have some resources that are going to have problems getting their oil out. Also, a number of countries that used to be considered somewhat allied with Russia have now cut off their relationships with Russia's main lackey, Belarus, through which oil flows. So it's kind of one of those things where, yeah, we've got all this oil that is right now getting into the ports, but it's going to be cut off here rather shortly. Some of it is. So enjoy the lower gas prices for the time being. Gold and silver weren't up much, well, a little bit, but really not much to speak of. Now, the bond market had almost a 7 basis point rise in the yield for the 10-year benchmark, and that means prices fell, which means that investors were getting out of bonds. Where were they going? Well, maybe a little to metals and maybe some to the Dow, but if you look at the trading volume on the S&P 500, it's just that. My goodness, a third, maybe a little more than a third of the typical volume was all we got today. In other words, the heavies are just keeping the money. They're selling off things like stocks and bonds and metals, and they're putting it into the bank in cash reserves, money markets, because they don't want to put it in any play until they see a little bit better about what's going on out there in the world. The bottom line, though, is that the markets are going up, then they go down, and there's no evidence right now that there's going to be some kind of an apocalypse, a black swan. But always remember what I've told you before, and I'm going to show you something in a few days. You can make money in a market that is going up. You can make money in a market that's going down. You have to decide you're going to do it and not just sit in the sand and cry if the markets kick sand in your face. And I'm going to show you, I think I'll be able to do it next week. I will show you how you can make money off stocks that are dropping in price. It's called short selling. It's something that's done a lot. And it's most people think, well, you buy stocks, you sell stocks. No, actually, the third way you make money off stocks is you make money off stocks by buying them. You don't make money off stocks when you unload them. You make money off stocks by buying them. You make money off stocks also by short selling them, by actually betting that the stock price is going to go down. And I'm going to show you how to do that next week. It's something that, well, if you have a brokerage account where you can do it, anyone who's got a brokerage account that allows it, you can make money betting on stocks dropping in price. And again, like I said, it's called short selling. A few years ago, before the lockdown, I actually did a simulation on a stock. I think it was Facebook. I'm not sure, though. I don't know. Well, I can't remember. But I showed essentially what you do is you borrow the stock of a company. And you just borrow it from the market itself. You don't borrow it from someone. You just borrow a stock of a company. And then you immediately sell it. And then you're going to pay interest on borrowing it. But then you wait for that stock to drop in price. And then you buy it back at the lower price and give it back to where you borrowed it from. So you make the difference on what you sold the borrowed stock for and what you had to buy it back at. That's a short sale. And it works if you bet right. If you think a stock is going to go down, you can just make money off it that way. But like I said, I'll do that next week. Coming over here and just having a look at, well, let me finish this off. The foreign markets actually seem to have been kind of chipper by the end there. FTSE was up. It closed just a while ago. And Nikkei overnight, it had plunged, and then it started groveling its way back and managed to come back by the time trading was over in Tokyo. But so right now, whatever's going to happen, it doesn't look like it's going to be dramatic for the time being. Going over here to the yield curve, notice that the last time we were here, the 3-5 year had finally straightened out. It was no longer inverted, but we still had the inversion on the 7-10, on the 5-7-10. Now, as of today and yesterday, you can see that the 3-5 has reverted to what it should be, upward rising with the maturity premium increasing. And we have the 3-5 and 7 are all in normal condition now. You still have the inversion on the 7-10. Does that mean no recession? Absolutely not. We had the inversion. That means recession. Is it going to be bad? And I don't think so. I'm not even sure it's going to be moderate. It might even be a lightweight recession, but we'll see. Well, you'll see because you'll be out there looking for jobs right about when it hits. So there's that. Let's hope for the best. Anyway, capital budgeting, NPV and IRR. Now, this was the first one I showed you, finding the net present value of a project at different interest rates. As you can see with this project, it was positive NPV if you use a discount rate of 8%. It was negative NPV if you used a discount of 20%. So somewhere between 8% and 20%, the project went from positive NPV to negative NPV. That crossing where the NPV is zero is the internal rate of return. As I said on a quiz or a test, I will ask you, the internal rate of return is the place where the NPV is or something like that. It's zero at the IRR. So in other words, if you drew the NPV profile line, it would cross at 12.22% internal rate of return on this project. And then I went over and I fatigued you with the modified internal rate of return, which simply says, well, we can't use an internal rate of return if the cash flow switches sign more than once, but we can modify it so we can still get it back. Here's the thing for today. In corporate finance, there is actually this kind of a theoretical proposition that regardless of what the project is, if it's positive NPV, you should take it on. Anything that's positive NPV essentially means that it will make an economic profit. Now, remember, we don't talk about accounting profit in finance. What we're talking about is at a discount rate of 8% on that project there, this thing actually, let me go back to the original one. At a discount rate of 8%, this project actually makes more money than it should, quote unquote, based upon its risk. At a risk of 8%, if it has zero economic profit, it has positive accounting profit. But it has if the NPV is zero, that means it makes no economic profit at that level based on its risk. In this case, at 8%, this project actually makes some more money than what it should for an 8% discount rate, for risk at 8%. Okay, that off to the side. Again, back to the original point. I mean, theoretically, if you find any positive NPV project, you should take it because you're going to make an economic profit off it. Well, there are some constraints on that as far as capital goes, but there's one place where you can't do that. And I saw this twice in my years of consulting. It's where you have two projects that are both positive NPV. They're both on the radar of the company. We know these are both positive NPV projects, but they're mutually exclusive projects. You cannot do both of them. Which one would you take? And especially if one has let me show you here. But let me give you an example, one that was when I was in my consulting. It was a relatively small company, and they had a piece of land. It was maybe about an acre and a half, 2 acres, wooded part of it was. And they had this idea, well, we could set up a children's park. Not like a normal park, but this one had supervision of the kids while the parents, you know, sat and enjoyed themselves, so the kids didn't do anything dangerous and they didn't have any weirdos hanging around. And it also had some fun things to do that would cost a little money. But it would be a modest fee that would be charged per parent, and you could buy subscriptions. And it was a positive NPV project. It was kind of a cool idea. Sort of a novel thing. You pay to play, but it's not a terrible, and they had things, you know, if you were low income, there'd be some subsidies from the local government. Okay, the other thing they could do with it was to make a small office complex, you know, frontage, you know, retail kinds of things, or something like that, where they would just put up maybe a 7-office strip, like a strip mall, but with office space. And that one was positive NPV too. But they couldn't take them both because there was one piece of land. The same would be true, for example, you, madam, you are my genius in my company. I can't do without you. And I've got two projects. I can't do one of the projects without you. So I've got to decide which one because I cannot have you in two projects at the same time. So that would, and actually that's kind of more realistic than companies want to admit it. They usually have a couple of hotshots who can do, they're do-everything types, and they don't really recognize that you can't split those people. They've got to do one thing or another. But anyway, so what do we do in a situation where you have two projects, they're both viable, but the problem is that they are mutually exclusive. Let me show you this. Now here, mutual exclusive projects. Now, interestingly enough, at a discount rate of 7%, they're both positive. But the internal rate of return of the more positive is 13%, a bigger hurdle, and the NPV and the IRR, internal rate of return, of the project B is 10%, a lower hurdle. Here's what that would look like graphically. The NPV profile line of project A takes it out so that it crosses at 13% IRR. The NPV profile of Project B comes down at 10%. That's a little steep. Let me make it a little less steep than that. Here's the thing about this. Which one of these is a, quote unquote, better project? I'll tell you something. What should be the answer, and then what almost every company will say is the answer, and they're not the same. Do you notice that in Project B, the cash flows, the big cash flows, are more loaded toward the beginning of the project, toward the early years? Look at it here. You see that in Project B, you got $80,000 out of the box on the first year, whereas you have only $20,000 out of the box on Project A in the first year. The same is true all down the line. And then Project B tails off fast. Project A is still cruising along a little better in the out years. That's what's driving the steepness of the line. The NPV profile line is steeper the more the positive free cash flows are loaded toward the front. Let me say that again. The project with the cash flows loaded toward the front has the steeper NPV profile line. The project with the cash flows loaded toward the front has the steeper NPV profile line. Now, if I've said that three times, you bet I'm going to ask that on a quiz and or an exam. I promise you. I want you to notice something, how you interpret that in another way. Do you see that the impact of a change in the discount rate is much, much stronger? The NPV drops much harder on Project B than it does on Project A. Look, they both changed by the same amount, but Project B's NPV is dropping much more dramatically than Project A's NPV is. Let me draw those a little better. I'm trying to do this in Excel, get the graphs, and I just couldn't get the graphs to work. But you see the point there, is that a discount rate on a steep NPV profile line, the NPV drops more dramatically for a given change in the discount rate. What that would mean in practice is if you are worried about interest rates changing, the Project A is going to have its NPV more dramatically affected by that change. Front-loaded projects are much more sensitive to changes in the discount rate. A fancy way of saying that is that projects with cash flows, free cash flows that are farther out is more robust. It doesn't feel the effect of a change in the discount rate nearly as much. So what is the decision? Probably in a case like this one, you would probably want to go with Project A than you would with Project B. But I guarantee you that most companies are going to want to go with Project B simply because you get the cash flow is big faster. It's almost like a shadow of the payback period method. I guarantee you, if they're looking at these two projects, they're going to see all that money coming in on Project B very quickly, and they're going to think, well, yeah, that's how we want things. And they're going to ignore Project A, even though it, in the long run, is going to be a better project. It's going to hold its NPV even if discount rates go up. It's going to maintain a positive net present value longer. But sure enough, you'll see the company see those big numbers there on Project B in the early years, and they're going to say, oh yeah, that's the one we want. Where is this going to apply in real life, in real world? We are coming to a time now where we have got project, we are now looking at least in many, in important critical industries, at projects that are going to take years to generate really serious free cash flows. Once they do, it will be staggering how much they make. But in the early years, they're barely going to make much money at all. A good example of that is fusion reactors, fusion energy technologies. Hell, we've been working on fusion since the 1970s. But now we are on the verge of the first prototype reactors, tokamak, stellarates, and there's another one, I guess, out there too. Now, once they start actually producing commercial energy, they are not going to make much money because there won't be many of them out there. There will be a few. So in 10 years, you'll probably see the first reactors generating cash, free cash flow, positive free cash flow. But it's going to be not very much until we start replacing every damn energy resource on this planet with fusion, because fusion is perfectly clean and it is infinite in its resource. It's the stuff that stars are fired up by. But that's going to be 50 years from now. So we have to have companies that aren't falling into the cash flows, big, big cash flows right away. That's the way you go. We have to have companies that are going to say, no, we have to do the long haul. These extraordinarily shallow NPV profile lines. That is the way that we'll have to do things. And the same is true for mining, space mining, mining on the moon, mining on asteroids. It will take years for that to even get started, and then it will be a very small amount of the metals that we get and other resources we get here to Earth and to near-Earth orbit. But once we do it, good God, we can make a fortune. The free cash flows will be staggering. Again, 40 years, 50 years out. So we again have to have these companies that are willing to set aside projects like B, where you get the money right off the bat, and we have to look at these things that are going to just trickle free cash flow, not for years, but for decades. But that's what we have to do. And so when you go out there into the world, here I am sending you on your mission again. Yeah, you're going to be in a corporate culture that says now is better than later, free cash flows as fast as possible, big, big ones. You're going to be in that environment. But as you take on more power and get more authority, you remember back to what we said, what I showed you here, that in the long run, those NPV profile lines that are so darn shallow that because the free cash flows are big way out there in the years, those are the ones that we have to do. And that's where we get into our mission that is beyond the immediacy of shareholder wealth, stakeholder wealth in the short run, and look at the longer run of it. Now, if that sounds preachy, it is. But, I mean, you can see it here that, and in fact, one of the good things about those ones that are have the, like Project A, is that they are less sensitive to the day-to-day, year-to-year swings in discount rates. They'll survive, they'll keep pumping, regardless of what the economic environment is. And so that's another reason why we want to look at those as one of our ways of handling the future. Guarantee you that when you go and you are doing your dog and pony show before the Wall Street boys, they're going to be bitching at you to get your free cash flows up now, right now. Or we're going to sell off from our funds. And they put the pressure on all companies. You know, fire people, do that. Yeah, and get some of those projects that'll start selling big time in a year or 2 years. You have to kind of set aside those kinds of people and say, look, we're in it for the long haul. That's how you create not just companies, but empires. That's all I have for